Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Presentation. This is IATF Common Audit Report Application, CARA, and Remote Auditing. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am a veto power team member for Perry Johnson Registrars. Our presentation is a two-part presentation. We're going to start with CARA. We're going to talk about what CARA is and how it works. We'll highlight some differences in how the audit process works. And how it impacts you from the client perspective. We'll transition then to remote auditing in the IATF standard. We'll go over some policies qualifying for a remote audit, and we'll cover a couple of the more important items that are unique in an IATF remote audit. Let's begin with CARA. Now, CARA, as I mentioned, stands for Common Audit Report Application. It is now, unbelievably, a three-year-old product, or almost a three-year-old product. And when it was originally written, it was intended to try to bring some consistency in the completion and reporting of IATF audits, both for your perspective as clients, but also from the perspective of the stewards of the standard, the OEM companies that demand IATF certification. Now, CARA covers all audit types, including the Stage 1 Readiness Review, surveillance audits, even special audits have a place within the CARA system. Now, one of the more common misconceptions about CARA is that it is a database, an online shared database. It's actually not. When CARA was developed, there was some speculation that this might happen in a similar fashion, for example, to the OASIS database that's used in aerospace. But ultimately, what we got was what's best understood as a web browser-based audit reporting tool. So basically, yes, you are using your internet browser, but the reports still live on your computer. They're not on the open internet. That's a very important thing for you to keep in mind when you're working with CARA. Now, every auditor, every certification body is given unique credentials to access CARA, to create audit content, what have you. But that content resides on the user's web browser. And the only time that it travels across computers, is exchanged between people, is if it's outputted into one of the possible formats. And I'll be giving some clarification on that in a couple of slides. Now, in terms of the audit process itself, now at this point, we've confirmed that really the audit process is no different under CARA than it had been previously. About the only significant change, really, from the audit perspective is the fact that now 15% of the on-site time can be devoted to report writing. That is different than the 10% that we'd had previously and the 10% that's allocated for other standards like ISO 9001. Now, in terms of the client experience, the primary change, the primary difference is going to be in responding to nonconformances. Now, in the past, what we had was you would receive a Word file, and then you would fill in your responses on the Word file, and send it back to your auditor with the evidence attached. Now, within the CARA system, that principle is unchanged, but the methodology is quite a bit different now. So let's go over how this is going to work kind of step by step. To begin with, your auditor will prepare the nonconformances within the CARA application. It's a page on their audit report. And those are given to you either via email or perhaps on a flash drive with the nonconformances housed in a single, what is referred to as a JSON or JSON file. Now, depending on the number of nonconformances that are written, your auditor may give you a single JSON file or multiple JSON files. Now, you are allowed to request either one. If you want individual JSON files for the individual nonconformances, that is perfectly fine. Now, the JSON file itself is no good to you outside of CARA. If you try to double click on it, if you try to do anything with it, you're going to get an error message. So it'll come to you like I've shown on the example here via email. You download it. And what you do then is go to the CARA website for ITF clients. And I've provided the URL here. That is nc-cara.itfglobaloversight.org. Now, when you get to that page, which you don't have to have any kind of special login rights or anything like that, you will find at the very bottom of the page, there's a link that you click entitled Load Report or Backup. You click that and you load the JSON file that the auditor provided you. Now, once the JSON file has been loaded, you'll be able to respond to the nonconformance by clicking on the edit button. Now, if you can look on the picture here all the way to the right, I've got it highlighted. The edit button looks a little bit like a pencil. If you click on that, you will be able to open the nonconformance and do what needs to be done with it. Now, obviously, the first thing that you want to do is read through that nonconformance and make sure that all of the information is accurate and that it reflects what was discussed and what was agreed to during the audit closing meeting with the auditor. It is required that these nonconformances be finished and turned over to you at the end of the audit. If you have an audit closing meeting and the nonconformances aren't ready, something's wrong. You need to get us involved so that we can help you with that. Now, if any part of what the auditor has documented is inaccurate or misconstrued, you need to notify your auditor as soon as possible. Also, if you decide that you need to file a dispute for one or more of the nonconformances, you have 15 days from the conclusion of the audit to do so. That's another important provision for you to keep in mind. Now, assuming that the nonconformance is understood and agreed to, you will begin to provide the response. And there's a lot of boxes that you need to fill in. I'm going to go ahead and take you through each one. The first item is called correction containment. Now, this includes an identification of the timing and the responsible parties. This portion of your response must include the results of your extent analysis that ensure that all similar situations were addressed. Now, obviously, a correction containment is the immediate closure of the issue cited by the auditor under the objective evidence portion. So, for example, if the auditor writes you up for not having a training record, your correction containment is to get that training record put together. Very simple, very straightforward. Immediately under the correction containment box is an evidence of implementation box. Now, this can be a reference to any document numbers or dated records or whatever that apply to that correction. Now, there is a second evidence of implementation field for corrective action also. Now, please note that this box is not the evidence items itself. It's not an attachment box. This is a description box. Now, the intent of having this is for you to expedite the auditor's ease of review of these items. In other words, you're describing all the different evidence items that you've provided that support your correction containment. Now, from there, there are four fields that all relate to root cause. The first of these is called root cause analysis. Now, this is actually, or was, I should say, a new item at the time, in spite of the name. And it was intended not to show the root cause result, but the analysis of the cause. So this is where you're capturing your 5-why or your checklist approach or whatever it is you did to kind of boil down what the root causes were. You then have a space for root cause analysis files. This is optional, but if you happen to do something like a fishbone diagram, what have you, you can provide that there. There's finally what's called a root cause result, the final established cause or causes for the cited issue. And then you have a space where you can provide a file for the root cause result if you happen to have one. Now, from there, we transition to the corrective action portion of the response. And as with correction, you need to be explaining the timing and the responsible parties. Now, there is a corrective action files field. This is actually kind of a duplicate field. You can disregard it in preparing your response and go straight to evidence of implementation. And again, the idea here is that you're going to describe the evidence that you're providing and correlate it back to your corrective action statement. Lastly, we have an evidence of implementation files field. And this is the space where you will attach all the actual evidence, all the things that you've described. Now, at this time, the only fields that are supported, the only file types, I should say, that are supported are JPEG and PDF files. So if you've got evidence in something like Word or Excel or what have you, that's fine. Those can be emailed separately to your auditor, but you do need to still describe those items in the evidence of implementation fields. So, okay. The final fields that are provided in the CARA response are for verification of effectiveness. Now, you should take appropriate steps to verify that you've implemented your corrective actions, whether that is a supplemental internal audit or some type of management discussion or what have you. And again, there is a space provided for you to provide description of evidence provided. Now, once you have completed your response, you're going to use the Save NCs for Auditor button. I've provided a picture of what it looks like here. And what that's going to do is output a new JSON file. And that JSON file is what you send to the auditor so that the auditor can review and hopefully approve your response. Now, we do recommend that you keep a copy of that JSON file. And we also recommend that you click the Print Report button and keep a printed copy of your response for your records also. Now, as you're filling in your response, one of the things that I try to emphasize to folks is be certain that you are looking for mandatory fields. Now, the easiest way to spot these is to look for the red outlined boxes. I've got an example here where you're supposed to fill in organization's representative. If that space is left blank, it's an invalid response. So you want to make sure that you're providing all of the mandatory content in filling in your responses to the nonconformances. Very important. So again, look for those red outlined boxes. Now, if the auditor or veto reviewer finds an issue with one or more of the responses that you've provided, these concerns will be outlined via the reviewer comments field. And I've given you an example of this below. Now, those comments are going to be shared with you via an updated JSON file. So basically, you'll go through the same process all over again to address whatever concerns were raised by the party that reviewed your initial response. So again, this is done via the JSON process. Now, after the final approval by the reviewer, you should expect to receive a finalized JSON file showing the approval for your records, in addition to a PDF copy. Now, some of our clients have asked us if they can continue to use their own corrective action format to record responses. You can certainly use your internal process to develop responses, but the official submittal of those responses has to be done via the CARA application. Unfortunately, we cannot accept your internal form as the sole submittal of this information. Now, if you've got some further questions or concerns on working with CARA, there's a couple of additional resources I'd like to direct you to. The ITF has developed a wiki information page. If you go to the CARA website, the NC-CARA website that I showed you earlier, you will find a link for the wiki page. I have provided the link here as well if you want to take a screenshot. Additionally, I've developed two training videos that walk you through the very basic steps of interfacing with CARA. So if you want to screenshot those links as well, those videos can provide a little bit of further insight. Let's transition now to remote auditing. Now, in terms of policies pertaining to ITF remote audits, as we're coming out of the pandemic, we have continued to refer to a document that we call the IATF COVID memo. Now, its official title is ITF Global Waivers and Measures in Response to the Coronavirus Pandemic. Now, this is actually a public domain document. You can get a copy of it for yourself from the IATF website. Now, we'll be referring to this document throughout our presentation as the COVID memo. We have been told, I should say, that with the pending update to ITF rules, which will be coming out, we think, sometimes toward the end of this year, that there will be some new policies coming from ITF on remote auditing. So everything that we're going over today is current as of today, but understand that these policies may very well be changing based on the new edition of the rules. First of all, can anybody qualify for a remote audit? Well, the short version is yes, but only if the audit is being done remotely because of COVID-19. As of right now, that is the only acceptable reasoning for a remote audit in the eyes of the ITF. Now, we have received some anecdotal feedback from the ITF that they're taking a very hard look at these things on recent witness audits, what have you. Understand that the ITF's expectation is that these audits are going to take place on site. That is definitely their default position. And so they really want to make sure that these audits take place on site. They will consider situations apart from COVID, but they're definitely trying to clamp down and keep those as few and far between as possible. Now, if you want to request a remote audit, the first thing you need to do is reach out to your scheduler here at PJR and explain your reasoning for requesting the remote audit. You're going to be sent a form entitled the F108 ICT ITF. This is our IATF remote audit questionnaire. Now, this form has been developed to ensure that PJR is meeting all requirements from the COVID memo, and specifically in section 1.3. where it talks about a standard documented agreement between PJR and the client with regards to the remote audit. We are required to issue a specific contract amendment for every ITF audit that is requested. Now, when you're sent the F-108 ICT ITF, the first thing that you're asked to do is to provide a rationale for why you are asking for a portion or all of your audit to be done remotely. Now, we've tried to provide some verbiage for you. And as you can see, there are things on here that have nothing to do with COVID-19. Now, if this is one of the things that you are requesting, if one of these is the rationale for your request, that's fine, but it's not a guarantee that your request is going to be approved. We have to go through a waiver process and get these approved by the oversight office. From there, the remainder of the F-108 ICT ITF falls under eligibility. We start with some questions that relate to the software and the hardware aspects. We talk about, okay, what is the software that you want to use? We offer GoToMeeting kind of out of hand. We have licenses for that. If there's other software that you want to use, Microsoft Teams, Skype for Business, what have you, that's fine. You just need to specify what it is we're going to be using. Now, in terms of hardware, in terms of the computers and phones and so forth, you need to think in terms of covering the entire areas that are going to be seen remotely. And that's going to include production areas. Think about cell phones. Think about body cameras. Understand that a cell phone with the camera running and the screen running is going to drain the battery fast. So you're going to want to think about battery backups and that sort of thing in terms of ensuring that the audit is going to be effective. You want to think in terms of Wi-Fi, cellular strength, to make sure that the auditor can see what they're looking at, that it's not just a pixelated image, that when they're speaking to the people, that the statements are understood, that the auditor's not having to do a lot of repeating themselves, thinking about headphones, these sorts of things. We talk also in the application about, do you have electronic records? Now understand that we don't expect you to have 100% electronic records, but you do need to be prepared to provide kind of a quick turn on items. So if say 20% of your records are hard copy, what are your resources for doing a quick scan on those items and putting them in the auditor's hands upon request? Now, understand that the expectation is that the auditor will select his or her own samples. It's almost never the case that you are pre-selecting items prior to the audit. The intent is that the auditor will request what they want to see, and you need to be in a position to be able to provide that. We ask if you are going to be manufacturing your product on the day of the audit. Now, this question is less relevant than it used to be, back when there were COVID shutdowns and what have you, but obviously we can't do our audit if your production area isn't running. Now, the next several questions all relate to ensuring that we can be confident that our audit time is going to be sufficient, because some of these items can definitely lead to an increase in the necessary audit time. We inquire about, have you had a shutdown? Again, it's been 3 years now that we've gotten past the height of the pandemic. Most companies are not experiencing COVID shutdowns, but we're required to ask. We're required to see, has there been a shutdown? When you came back, did you have startup verification plans? What have you? We ask about extraordinary measures. Did you have to outsource manufacturing? Did you have to bring on day laborers to make sure that you were making your production quotas, what have you. We ask about resources. Did you lose either temporarily or permanently certain resources? Have you had to make any changes to your day-to-day protocols, new safety provisions, things of this nature? Now, in question 11, you are asked to appoint an audit coordinator. Now, this is a special designation. It's actually discussed right in the COVID memo. And it says that this person manages connections, availability of auditees, and technical issues throughout the entire audit. Now, it may be necessary to have more than one coordinator, especially if you are going to be having more than one auditor with parallel audits being conducted simultaneously. Now, the COVID memo goes on to say that the audit team has to maintain full control of the audit and discussion to ensure that the coordinator is not responding for the auditees. Now, that coordinator can likely be whomever is usually responsible for being the auditor's guide and therefore subject to the same bylaws applied to guides by both IETF and ISO 17021-1. I've got a few more comments on the audit coordinator coming up in a couple of slides here. Question 12 talks about the technology test session. Now, this is yet another item that's mandated by the COVID memo, where it states that you need to conduct a test session prior to the audit, not the morning of the audit, but prior to the audit, and for all technology types in all environments, facilities, and locations planned for the audit, including a mock audit test. So this is going to include areas of the manufacturing floor, the warehouse, if you have one of those, etc. And it's expected, it's mandated, I should say, that this is done between the client and the audit team, not the client and PJR. We're not conducting the audit here from PJR headquarters. Your auditor is presumably going to be joining you from his or her home. So this is kind of a test on both ends to make sure that your connection works and that the auditor's connection works. Now, the final portion of the IETF ICT gives you a space to provide a listing of who your automotive customers are and give an indication if they are operational or not. And again, this is another question that we're required to ask, but now 3 years in, it is of limited applicability. So as I mentioned, there's a couple of things that we talked about earlier that I want to spend a few extra minutes on. Let's start with the audit coordinator. Now, as I mentioned, typically, this is going to be the person that is usually the guide for the auditor when he or she is on site. But understand that that person, the audit coordinator, they need to be reasonably versed in the technical aspects of the remote interface. They need to know what they're doing with the computer. They need to know what they're doing with the cell phones. But at the same time, they cannot interject themselves into audit interviews or attempt to select the audit samples on the auditor's behalf. The auditor maintains control of the audit at all times in a remote environment, just as it is when the auditor is on site. Now, in terms of the technology test session, this again, just to emphasize, this is all support locations, all production areas, all administrative areas, et cetera. We need to have reasonable assurance that the remote audit will be successful. Now, you can expect the technology test session is going to be anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 hours, depending on how complicated the arrangement is. And again, this technology test session must occur outside of the actual audit process, days before in most cases. Now, what happens if some part of the remote audit doesn't work? We lose our connection or whatever the case may be. The COVID memo states that if any part of the remote audit is not successful, It can that time that's been lost has to be added to a subsequent audit. Now, we've approached this in a couple of ways. If the audit being done is a surveillance audit, we're going to add time to the next on-site audit. If the remote audit in question is a stage two or recertification audit, what we're most likely going to have to do is perform a supplemental assessment to make up the difference in lost audit time. Now, if you're not comfortable with a remote audit, if you can't support a remote audit, in the past we had allowances for delaying the audit in excess of the time frame shown in the Rules 5th Clause 511. We no longer have those permissions. Basically, you must perform your audit, either on-site or virtually, per the required time frame, or you risk losing your certification. Now, if you have hard copy records and you are in a situation where you must go remotely, you may have to use some of your available time to start scanning and getting your records online. I just want to assure all of you, we are a tenured provider of remote audits. We deployed our remote audit strategy right around the time the pandemic was declared in March of 2020. Since that time, we've performed in excess of 1,500 remote audits for a variety of schemes, including at this point, probably over 100 IETF remote audits. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about the remote audit process that PJR offers, we do have a separate webinar entitled Virtual Audits Explaining PJR's Approach and Expectations. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. We have a very popular webinar all about the interaction of processes and its importance to a successful audit. This is an exploration of processes and how to correctly understand them. We have webinars on a wide variety of other topics, stage one auditing, ISO 9001, and so forth. Lots of great content. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the best way for you to do that is to visit our website at www.pjr.com, enter your email address in the provided space, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for automatic updates on upcoming webinars, changes to the standards, and other points of helpful information. I do thank you for your time. I hope you have found this presentation to be helpful. Do we have any questions today? Again, please utilize the question portion of the dashboard. Okay, well, again, have a great day, all of you, and thank you so much.